listening, and the rest of you can have whatever kind of an afternoon you want.
Ooh.
Faulty today.
I like preferably this. Have a crappy day and get it out of the way.
Oh, right, because Ken always says, don't wish me a good day because you only get so many and I don't want to waste them.
Yeah, there's a quota. A lot of people have a bad time around Christmas because they done used up all their good days. So.
Yeah, stop telling me to have a nice day. I'll use mine when I want to.
This is
fair enough.
A very positive and uplifting show, is it?
No. I like the crappy day thing.
No, that's not why we're here.
Have a crappy
Monday,
day.
Tuesday,
don't want you to
crappy
get
days.
Constipated.
Well, we are all here. There's Sarah and Ken and Joe, and I'm Diane, and this is the Ramble Room, and I guess that's what we're going to do, right, is we're going to ramble.
Yep, end the show.
All right.
We have met our quota of rambling as well.
A while back... A long while back, we started talking about some American history so that we could sort of remind ourselves how we got where we are and why. And
we were younger then.
Yes, quite a bit.
Better looking.
Speak for
yourself.
Is
that possible? And I remember this, have this vague memory of getting ready to start talking about Thomas Paine's Common Sense, and then we went, oh, well, wait. Before that, we need to talk about some other stuff that happened. And
for you younger people, Common Sense is not that convenience store at the edge of town.
They do make a mean burrito there, though.
Do they?
Yeah. Thomas Paine is not responsible for that. So I just very briefly give us a little bit of background about Thomas Paine's Common Sense and how it related to the Revolution, if you would. Just
okay.
Like 34 seconds.
Okay. Common Sense was the title of a pamphlet by Thomas Paine, and it was during the lead up to the Revolution, and he was just trying to convince people that, yes, this is what we need to do. We need to be done placating Britain and just get on with things. So when I was going to talk about Common Sense, the pamphlet, and realized that we need to go back and talk about some other things that led up to that and some of the battles and things like that. So you can go back and listen to those if you want to. But then I thought, all right, we're getting back to Common Sense. So I'm going to start reading this. And I got to the first paragraph of the introduction and went, whoa, wait a minute, we have to talk about that. So this is going to be a really long process getting through this pamphlet.
You know how Rush Limbaugh went on for 30 years and they had Rush babies who had grown up listening to him?
Some of you who are
very young now are going to be Ramble Room babies, God willing, and you will have spent your adult lives listening to notes on Common Sense as we get through a pamphlet that was
right, because
what, 100 pages.
Well,
maybe?
I printed it out. I think it's 27 pages long, and we're going to talk about the first paragraph of the introduction today.
It's like preaching through Romans.
Yeah, this is exegetical history.
Okay.
All right, so in the introduction, the first paragraph. Perhaps the sentiments contained in the following pages are not yet sufficiently fashionable to procure them general favor. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises at first a formidable outcry in defense of custom. But the tumult soon subsides. Time makes more converts than reason. So, the part that made me stop and want to discuss with the Ramble Room is, a long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises at first a formidable outcry in defense of custom. And I think that we can all come up with some examples of things that we now just sort of go along with because we always have done it that way, and we think that we've always done it that way, and we haven't.
My generation is growing up in... I don't even know how to explain my generation. I don't even like my generation. I'm sorry. They do all kinds of things that I disagree with horribly.
They're not unique.
No.
Every generation has its...
What topic were you going to go with?
What do they think is right that because we've always done it that way and we haven't always done it that way?
I don't know.
I think the short-sightedness. They can't imagine a world without computers, for
right.
example. The next generation can't imagine a world without an internet.
Well, their world doesn't exist without an internet.
Yeah.
They've never known
their
what
world
it is.
Is
right.
The internet. And silly me, I remember being thrilled that we got a new party line telephone. You had to listen for your ring so you knew when to answer when it wasn't for the neighbors.
Kids going outside and playing.
What?
Kids going outside and playing. That doesn't happen anymore. But these, even my generation, you know, I guess technology got
it's
there
dangerous.
Soon enough.
There are perverts in COVID out there.
Right. Well, and I mean, everything's being normalized.
Sorry, they're
now.
Not perverts. They are just identify other sexual desires. They'll be okay given another 3 weeks. I just read another article the other day talking about how everybody must acknowledge that within them, pedophilia is something that they should be in touch with. That you need to understand your own inner
I thought when it
wrestling.
Came to pedophilia, you didn't want to touch much.
Yeah, that,
but that
that's the way it used to be.
Way off topic from Thomas Paine, which is why I'm very confused right
okay.
now.
Okay.
Well, the things that we do now. Here, just a really good example of things that we do now that we didn't do before, but we think that it's normal and that's the way that things have always been, is if you look at the children and how much interaction they have with each other through phones and computers and never in person.
Right, yeah.
And so all of these kids are growing up. Even in my generation, they got there early enough. Even in my generation, people just don't communicate with each other except for through text and email.
And even the parents, so let's say they're some of them are older than you are, they remember when the internet wasn't just right there all the time, but they were already getting to that point where they were afraid of what was going to happen to their kids. And then there was this pressure for them to excel, and you had to do organized sports and that kind of thing. Just the idea that you don't have time to go out and play because we got to go to baseball practice.
Well, and the next generation is going to be checking your privilege. And all the time you're going to be like, am I being white right now?
Let's get back to the original thought, which was you said at one point everybody can give an example of something that we've just always done because that's how it's done and therefore it must be right. And I would throw this out there. I have been discouraged by the way church is done for many years. Roughly 150 years ago, they had some revival tent meetings, and they went really well, and everybody was enthused about them, and it spurred the church on. And so ever since then, that's how we do church. We try to recreate that magic that happened that one time out in a meadow in Punxsutawney Phil's country.
So it's like,
or wherever it was.
It's like meth. You do it that one time, and then you just keep doing it, thinking, it's going to be like the first time, and it never is.
Trying to get the feeling.
Feels like the first time. Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to suggest, but now I don't have to. if you have a really good night, and you go back and try to recreate it, it never works again. But that's what we do. So my story is, or my point is, my analogy is, for the last 150 years, churches get together and do things pretty much the way they always have. And one person up front, congregation sitting out there, have a little bit of singing, have a little bit of preaching. That's how you do church.
But the singing is supposed to be getting you in the spirit and giving you
this worship.
Feeling. Yeah, it's worship if you feel a certain way, and we're going to sing the same song over and over, going over until you feel it.
I feel something. But I would imagine if you went back to the times of the catacombs and you talked to the early Christians about how they did church, would they recognize what we do, or vice versa? Same thing about going to different parts of the world today, even though most, because of missionaries, most church services, I believe, Christian church services, are based on some sort of a roughly same concept. They vary according to culture. And once we've done something one way, we continue to do it that way because that must be the best way.
So we've been doing that long enough that if you suggest something else, everybody gets mad at you and kicks you out.
Yeah, that can't be right.
I love that you brought up that point because I'm doing lesson plannings as we're getting ready to start our homeschool year. And the first book that we're all going to read together, my kids and me, is Tom Sawyer. So I've been as I'm at work, I'm listening ahead.
Lisa,
to
it's not
Sawyer.
Huck Finn. That should be banned.
Well, Huck Finn
along
is
with
next.
Catcher in the Rye.
So, there's one particular chapter where Tom is in church, and clearly it's Mark Twain's own bitterness coming through the pages. But he's talking about how at the end of the service, the preacher, it says that he became the bulletin board and started rattling off all of these announcements as though they didn't have newspapers and such. But the quote that he said is, like, I had to look it up, but the less there is to justify a traditional custom, the harder it is to get rid of it. And I love that perspective. That just, it's kind of like the complaining that people always do about meetings. Why do we have to have a meeting? Well, because we always have meetings. Yeah, but we could have just sent out a memo. Yeah, but then we wouldn't know that everybody got it, so we have to have a
just
meeting.
Just send us all home with donuts at the end of the day.
I'll do whatever you want, as long as you give me a donut. But when you first started talking about what are the things that we always do when we think that that's just necessary, that's just the way to do it, for whatever reason the first thing that popped into my head was baby showers and weddings.
That's perfect.
We have these things that just it's I'm having my baby and now it's my turn for my baby shower, and I'm getting married and it's my turn to do my wedding my way,
and probably in that order.
Probably, yes.
Because you go back, you know, you go back 100 years ago, and if a woman found herself with child before she was married, it was a great disgrace, and she was going to go take care of an aunt in Minneapolis or something.
You were not getting a baby shower.
She was going to be shuffled out, and you would not get a baby shower.
But people get so focused on, let's take just weddings, for instance. People get so focused on, okay, now it's my wedding, and this is how I've been envisioning it for all these years. And they don't realize that 90% of the American traditional wedding things that we do are from pagan backgrounds. And they don't even think about the meaning behind them. They just go, it's my turn, and this is what I want. And we don't even think about, is it right or wrong? Does it mean anything? Is it good? Is it beneficial? Or is it just your turn?
Right.
Like Hillary Clinton's entire
or
campaign.
do we even waste our time with it anymore?
Right. Well, people will not waste their time with legal documents as quickly as they will wasting their time with spending other people's money on a day that is all about them.
I found something interesting just the other day. It was some people were talking to me about the possibility of doing a wedding in Kansas. And so I looked up, what's the law for who can do a wedding in Kansas? And I looked up the law for who can do a wedding in Wyoming, and they're very different. But one of the things that you can do in Kansas is what they call a common law wedding, mm-hmm. where you don't need an officiant at all. Just the two people agree that they're married, and it's done.
That's like a thousands of years old tradition.
Right.
Must be right then.
Well, it was about putting two people together, and they did it with witnesses, and the parents would join their hands or yes. something like that, and they go, there you go. Well, you guys are married. And then you could have a big party if you wanted to, but the marriage was you two go together now.
Right. The funny thing about a modern marriage is that it's entirely about making money. The government makes money from your marriage. The caterer makes money from your marriage.
Oh, you're talking wedding, not marriage.
Right. Well,
okay.
Wedding and marriage, their wedding, their marriage. Your marriage is all about money. In that first day, somebody's charging you to get married.
Oh, it's not just the first day. There's the honeymoon.
Right.
You've got to go for at least a week.
Well, there wasn't always a time where you had to pay to get married.
Right. Yes.
So there's something that is an age-old tradition that
but
is poo-poo.
Right. And part of what we've done is that it used to be that the poor people couldn't afford that kind of thing.
Right.
But the rich people could. And we have decided that everyone should be allowed to do the stuff that used to be only for rich people. We'll put ourselves in debt in order to do that.
So go back, if you would, Diane, and read that phrase again. Kind of recenter us on what we're supposed to be discussing. Because we have rambled, believe it or not.
Shocking. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right.
Okay, so what is something that is wrong that we have just accepted as that's okay and therefore made it right?
Credit card debt.
There's a good one.
What were you, is it wise to be in debt? Is it okay for a company to manipulate your finances that way? Is it okay for us to even be under a credit system where some arbitrary number can decide whether
credit
or not
scores
you
didn't
house?
Used to be a thing.
No.
What about this is one that Diane likes. What about education? How children are educated? Oh.
They steal my heart.
Buckle your seatbelts, people.
Well, we have a long habit of thinking that there's only one way to do that. That the public schools are responsible because they are the professionals. They know better than parents do how this should be done. And we have several generations of parents now who don't know that this wasn't always the way we did it. And I know that we hear sometimes about, well, you know, the founders were all homeschooled. Well, yeah, those were the elites and they had tutors and things like that. But what about Abraham Lincoln? He was studying borrowed books by firelight after he worked full days and
things
like that.
Which he would walk miles to return promptly.
Right.
Because he was on it.
Right.
We called him that.
Yeah.
But a couple of things that I wanted to just bring up is that the public school system we know now it was 1837, Horace Mann became the first secretary of the Massachusetts Board of Education. So Massachusetts was the first state to have compulsory education.
He would have to change his name now because it's very sexist.
But this was almost 200 years ago now.
Aw, man.
Horace Mann and Horace Woman.
Whoa.
That's still only two genders.
That's pretty close to profanity there.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
This will take some editing.
Yes. So, Massachusetts in 1852 was the first state to have compulsory education. And the other thing that sometimes we don't think about is that the fact that you had to send a child to school was not 8 hours a day, 9 months out of the year. It would be like after the harvest was over, the kids have to go to school for 5 hours a day for till January or whatever, you know, throughout the winter.
To your knowledge, was Sunday school ever incorporated as a mandatory thing? The reason I ask that is because the idea of Sunday school was that farm children especially were busy all during the week. Sunday was a replication in some ways of the Sabbath. And so families got together, they spent the whole day together as a part of the social function of church, and they had what they called Sunday school, which was an opportunity to educate the children together on certain things. Do you happen to know if that was ever
part of public school?
Yes.
No.
I would guess that that was never part of it, because when compulsory education became a thing, it was part of a Prussian influence that was definitely not religion-based. So why would they want compulsory education to be a thing when what we're teaching them out of is the Bible?
Wasn't it based off of needing factory workers?
Yes.
Yes. But going back to your point, that's true that the people who, Horace Mann and John Dewey and some others, went to Prussia and said, yes, this is what we want, this kind of training for our children. But they couldn't do it all at once. So the Bible was in school. The Bible was, there was mandatory Bible reading in some schools for a long time. And they knew they were just going to have to wait out the old people, the old-fashioned, narrow-minded people, just wait till those teachers die. But they have a patience that we just don't understand.
It's superhuman.
Yeah. So I don't think they ever said, they never put Sunday school into public school compulsorily, but it did take, probably like into the 1920s to start weeding out the Bible. They didn't outlaw it, but it became sort of optional. People started having a little bit of pushback, that I don't really want that for my kids and stuff. And before that, you just had to do it.
What else is, what is the public school system doing that to?
To what?
The pushing it out, just like they did Christianity.
History.
Mathematics.
Yeah.
Patriotism.
Science.
Grammar.
Yeah. The scientific method, anyway.
So pretty much knowledge, yeah, right. Because that's not what it's about. And that hasn't been the intention of like the NEA, and people can hate me if they want, but you can also go read a book that is very enlightening. The NEA, The Trojan Horse in American Education by Samuel L. Blumenfeld, and he goes back and does a lot of this research. This is not the only place that I've heard this before, but you'll get a lot of the names in there. And some of the things they did, like taking phonics out of schools. They knew that it wasn't a good way to teach by whole word and whole language, but they also knew that people who could read really well were a little bit harder to control than people who couldn't.
Do you also think that maybe too many kids were getting hooked on phonics?
And if you're going to get hooked on something.
Well, you know, addiction's bad.
And it's really easy to do if you wait till just the right time.
Yeah.
So work that for could me. Be, yeah.
What was the gateway letter?
I.
Yeah. Really. E-I-E-I-O.
I think I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
What? Okay. Anyway, compulsory school attendance, like I said, in Massachusetts, it was 1852 before they were the first ones. The last state was Mississippi in 1918. So it took a long time, relatively long time, to get every state to do that. Wyoming did it in 1876 before we were even a state. And I haven't looked into the history on that, but I think it probably had to do with just trying to look really statey.
We're
we got
here.
It. Women can vote, so now we got enough people, and we have school, and we have all the statey things.
And we can hang women here.
Yeah.
In those days, they were doing anything they could to encourage people to come out here and help out.
Now we're like, please, God, leave.
Yeah.
My, how the tables have turned. Maybe that goes back to your original premise. Things that we always thought were right. Let's get more people here. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go there. Okay. I can finish up here. But part of my...
It's a silly place.
Part of my study several years ago was just do that. The time period between the end of the Civil War and World War I, a lot of stuff happened that changed many, many things. And a lot of people lived through that from, you know, childhood through adulthood. And we're seeing all those things. Like the Civil War is fought with horses, and then the World War I is horses and tanks, but in between there you have airplanes and better, faster trains and electricity and telephones and all those things, and people's heads had to have been spinning. But while studying that era, one of the things that really struck me was how a couple of things that I was reading. Well, it shows up in a lot of books that were written around in the between 1910 and 1920, where people are complaining about like how much time school is starting to take from kids, but they're not studying. It's not like, oh, my kids have so much homework that's just hours and hours. It's like, why don't my kids have any homework, but they're off every night to an activity? So this is in the 1920s that parents are starting to go, wait a minute, that's, I don't understand what's going on here. And they're not learning Latin, but they're going to they're having a trade class, learning how to be a worker. There's that.
Which makes sense, because you're coinciding with an industrial revolution, with all these new technologies, advancing technologies, and we've got to have worker bees to take care of those. We don't need any more inventors. We got that handled.
Mm-hmm. And we'll pick them, and we'll pay them to keep them on our side so that the science says what we want it to say.
And then we'll make them stupid so that they're content and happy.
Right.
My toaster talks to me.
Well, that would be another one of those things that we think is a good thing that's really not, in my opinion, is this advancement in technology. And from the time I was really young, every time somebody was like, oh, have you seen these new things that they're smart refrigerators where you put your food in there and it tells you when you're out of milk? Ah!
Well, I remember the, I remember the commercial that kind of freaked me out. And I think it was in the early 2000s. Everybody started going, there's an app for that.
Yeah.
There's an app for that. Well, by Jove, there is an app for that. There's an app for everything anymore. And all of these apps take your information and they're giving them to other people, and those apps were actually pretty bad.
There was an original Star Trek episode which really has always stuck out in my head. And when they got to this planet, all there were these brains in a circle hooked up to a central computer. And I thought that came out probably 1968, somewhere in there, before anybody really thought about PCs. I was driving down the street today and I saw two women walking across the street, both of them totally engrossed in their own phones, bumping into each other, shoulder to shoulder as they crossed them. They almost tripped over the curb on the other side. They didn't need the physical world around them. They were completely enveloped in this technological realm in which they lived.
But we talk about that in terms of the technology that we have today, but like you were saying, these people that were watching all of these things come about during that time period, you said their heads had to have been spinning. It was the same reaction, just different stuff. Mm-hmm. So look at what the cotton gin did to African Americans. Look at what workhouses and factories did to little children. Look at how many things we've developed that were supposed to make life easier, and all they've done is make us lazier and less in touch with nature and less in touch with each other.
Less capable of doing anything.
Right. Is it really that much of a good thing that we keep, quote, advancing as a culture?
When did we live on Garmisch? 1992?
A little bit. Yeah, mid-90s.
Somewhere in the early to mid-90s. I remember because we brought home this piece of furniture that I built that was a place to put the computer. I remember sitting down and for the first time in my life going online through AOL.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And I look back on that, and that's been 25 years. Mm-hmm.
Shut your mouth.
30 years?
25 at the most.
Yeah, about 25 years ago. In my lifetime, that 25 years is significant, but it's a pretty short period of time at this perspective. And you look at the change that has occurred, and all the things that we used to hold as right and true that have just suddenly gone by the boards.
There is no right.
There's an expression that goes back away. There is no right.
It's just my truth.
Get your right stuff out of the way in the name of progress.
Yep.